This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
I'm sitting in for the chair today, and my colleague, Representative Dennard, is sitting in as vice chair, as Representative Greenfield is out of town. So at this time, I would like to ask the secretary to call the roll, please.
Representative Bartles.
Here.
Davis.
Here.
Deutsch.
Here.
Healy.
Here.
Jensen. Representative Jensen. Excused.
Excuse.
Hines.
Here.
Marty.
Excused.
Ms. Cummins.
Here.
Odenbach.
Here.
Soy.
Here.
Stevens.
Here.
Dennard.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Madam Chair, you have 12 present and 3 excused.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. I'd like to remind the testifiers to be sure to sign in, and all lobbyists, please be sure to be wearing your badges. If you have handouts, I'd ask that you would distribute those through the pages and also, if possible, make those available online. At this time, I'd like to take the opportunity to have our pages introduce themselves, please.
Good morning. My name is Lydia Christian. I'm a homeschooled senior from Sioux Falls, and I plan to study business administration.
Thank you. Ms. Christian, do you have a personal privilege? Is there someone you might like to introduce in the room?
Yes. Behind me is my mom, Julie Christian. She's great.
Thank you.
I'm Erica Ingerson. I am a junior from Eureka High School.
Welcome both very much. Thank you for all you do for us. We really appreciate it. Any other personal privileges on part of the committee? Personal privileges? Okay. I would like to take a personal privilege. I would like to also recognize the mother of our vice chair. Nancy Dennard, who's also in the audience today. So thank you for being here. At this time, I would like to just remind you that all testimony will go through the chair, and all questions will also go through the chair. We have two bills today. The first one is Senate Bill 28. 128. Do we have any proponent testimony for Senate Bill 128?
Good morning, Madam Chair, fine members of the Education Committee, Representative Spencer Goss, District 23. I come to you as a large proponent of this bill. This is a bill that has been in the works for the better part of 3, maybe 4 years, dealing with the broadcasting of events, especially high school activities. I am a broadcaster. I have been a broadcaster for, well, we're going on 21 years now. Since I was 16 years of age, I've worked for the local radio station and broadcasting sports. It's what I went to college for, one of the things I went to college for. And in those years, we've seen the industries change, and we've seen the markets open up. This particular body, 2013, I'll let the other proponent run that through to make sure that I'm right on that, maybe 16, brought a bill that required the freedom of all broadcasting capabilities when it came to high school sports. For many of you that played high school sports, you understand what that means. There was always that one guy that was out in the stands that was broadcasting your game, and it was always pretty cool, especially if you're from a small town. If it was a football game, oftentimes that looked like, well, as some of the representatives in here would know, that was somebody like Pat Morrison standing on top of a minivan with his equipment trying to call broadcast football and baseball games. So it's a tradition. It's a tradition in South Dakota, and it's something that's really prevalent to our small towns. It used to be one of those situations in which you represented one town. I now represent all of North Central South Dakota with conglomerations and as schools continue to consolidate. So this is a really important bill. I think you're going to hear some great testimony with that. I will turn it over to the other proponent. I will go back and do my job in a different committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brock Greenfield. I'm the senator from District 2. My hometown is Clark. Madam Chair, I have an amendment that I have put online. I've distributed to your committee. With your permission, I'd like to speak to that.
Yes, would you like that moved at this time?
Please.
Mortensen moves 128C.
Second.
There's a motion by Representative Mortensen, a second by Representative Bartles. Is it Bartles? To pass 128C. And that's a voice vote, so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 128 is amended to include 128C. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee. I will touch on that before I conclude my remarks. Back as Representative Gosh mentioned, back in 2013, this issue was before the legislature as it related to exclusive contracts. There had been a couple schools that had sought to enter into, and I should say public schools, that had sought to enter into exclusive media contracts with local broadcasters. The legislature as a whole determined that that was not appropriate and established the policy that there would be no exclusive contracts relative to public schools and media contractors media contractors. So what happened a couple years ago changed the paradigm a little bit, and I'm not going to get too into the minutia because I want to state that the South Dakota High School Activities Association has been really, really good to work with throughout this process this year. In fact, this bill came over to you unanimously on the Senate side. The High School Activities Association did appear as an opponent the first time this bill was heard in committee, but after working with them, we came to a point where they were neutral. They were willing to work with us. They heard our concerns. And they understood that the spirit of what we're trying to do with this legislation is consistent with the spirit of the law passed in 2013. What had happened is that the National Federation of the Association of High Schools, I think I'm saying that correctly, but it's NFHS, had begun getting its technology into some schools in the state of South Dakota. And when those kinds of deals were struck, the NFHS seemed to take the position that they had exclusive broadcasting rights. And subsequently, there were $100 charges levied on people who tried to do secondary broadcasts and or the NFHS required those secondary broadcasters to put out their service announcements, their public service announcements that were NFHS specific. Again, don't want to get too into that because we are at a point right now, I think, where there's consensus that this is consistent with the law passed in 2013 as the language is before you today. And I do just want to express my gratitude to the High School Activities Association and Dr. Swartos for hearing the concerns and working with us on language that would be appropriate. Also, I want to thank our LRC staff because they've worked on amendments at my request. And at 4:04 this morning, I received a text from the chair of this committee, who's not with you today, telling me that LRC had some technical changes that they'd like to make. You have adopted those, but let me just touch on why those are included in the language now. Under the under sub 1, association is any association, it said created under chapter 13-36, but staff told me they're really not created under that chapter. So it would be more appropriate to say that meets the requirements of 13-36-4. Again, really the creation as opposed to meeting the requirements of. And so that seemed to be more operative language. On page 2, section 3, instead of each school district, say the board of a school district, and instead of having to restate it, and the school board, so it'd say the board of a school district shall adopt policies as opposed to rules. It was pointed out to me that the legislature and then the bureaucracy, they're the ones that establish rules through the rulemaking process. School boards adopt policies. And the shall and may, I ran this language by Dr. Swartos. He asked me some questions about that. And I don't want that to be a stumbling block, and I don't think it will be. I think I can work with the High School Activities Association and establish further rationale as to why that language is there. But I think it was staff's observation that if we're going to put this law in place, there should be a policy governing it at the local level, as opposed to the permissive language. And I think that the High School Activities Association can provide some counsel as to how to proceed in adopting those policies. Again, I don't want to create an onerous or burdensome process. I just think that in keeping with the spirit of the law instead of the permissive language, we say that they shall adopt those policies and they shall be applicable within the local school district. Again, you folks have already adopted that. I appreciate it. I wanted to provide some rationale as to why those are brought forward and note that they were the entirety of that, as you can see, was recommended by staff. Staff told me this section is actually becoming very easy to understand at this point. So I think the bill makes our existing law better. I think that it establishes that the policy that is applicable to the school districts is also applicable to the media contractors and the High School Activities Association. There should be no ambiguity, and there should be no loopholes by which somebody can enter into that arena and claim exclusive authority. And I also would mention, we worked on the language to ensure that nothing changes relative to the state championship events. And when I say state championship events, that's the state level events. Everything from the quarterfinals to the finals would be subject to High School Activities Association having exclusive authority to grant a contract to a media provider. In the present day, for many years, it's been South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're not touching that. I will not touch that. We've established that the High School Activities Association, in conjunction with South Dakota Public Broadcasting or whoever the media contractor is, can grant authority to secondary broadcasts, but that would be under their terms. I think that's appropriate. We're recognizing that they do have jurisdiction over those events, and we're not trying to tread on that turf. But everything up to and including what used to be called regional level events would be subject to this policy or this statute if this should pass. Again, I've really tried to work to make this something that everybody can agree with. I think, and I don't want to jinx myself, I think this should be a consent-style bill at this point. We've alleviated the opposition's concerns, and that was largely because they were willing to help out, come alongside us, and be a partner in drafting the changes that have been attached to the bill through the amendment process. And I would just really encourage your yes vote, and I will stand by for questions. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony?
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dan Swartis, Executive Director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association. I'll be brief. As the sponsor said, we started out in opposition, and I'm thankful for Senator Greenfield for working with us on that. We feel that this is now reflective of what we're actually doing in practice and what we've spent the last couple of years working pretty hard on to create those opportunities for local broadcasters. In the defense of the NFHS, I don't know that there's another state that has a law like this, so they have a... I have to constantly remind them that we have a law that doesn't allow exclusive contracts for schools, and I think there were some contracts sent out before they fully understood what that law was. So I don't think there was ill intent on the NFHS's part in any of this. But to the point of the bill, I think it's reflective as to what we've been doing and what we've worked on for the last couple of years, and I'm appreciative of Senator Greenfield. We did have a question on that may and shall, and I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what shall means in terms of in legalese, for a better word, and if that becomes required, that's something we can work with our schools on and put out some model policies. I would guess most schools have something like that already. So I can stick around for a few minutes for questions, but we do have a board meeting that I have to get back to our office for this morning. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Permission to remove my mask?
Granted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Justin Smith. I am an attorney from Sioux Falls, the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Newspaper Association. The association and I were actually heavily involved in the drafting and passage of the legislation in 2013 that became the statutes that are amended by SB 128. So we support this bill as a clarification and strengthening of those statutes and the principle that's at the heart of them, that a free media requires access to public events, including high school activities. The bill represents a good outcome of a cooperative discussion. I want to thank Senator Greenfield and the High School Activities Association for their work. This is more of a confirmation of the laws from 2013 affirming the media access without charge for that access. We'd be happy to be involved in any discussions on any model policies for media access that will be adopted by the local school districts, but regardless, we do appreciate the bill and the sponsor and the other proponents, and would ask for your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony? Any proponent testimony in the room? Any online? Okay. Yes, Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's late in session, and I've got 1,000 things going on, and right now it's as though I'm drinking from a fire hose. For the record, I'm Brock Greenfield again. I have asked that Representative Bartles or some other member of the committee would take a look at that previously adopted amendment, change the shall back to may, because I had an offline discussion and there was some concern over that, and I don't want this to be a stumbling block. This policy has worked relative to schools and whether or not there could be exclusive contracts. The enabling or the permissive legislation just simply says you may do this. This is in accordance with the spirit of the bill. As Dr. Swartos just testified, he believes that most of these schools do have them. I don't want to create a situation, though, in which there's any concern for any of the school boards across the state. And again, given that this has worked relative to the schools, I'm completely fine with leaving the language in there that was in the bill. That only came to my attention this morning, and it was recommended by staff. That is a more substantive change, however, than the other technical changes to the bill. So rather than getting wrapped around that, I'd ask you to take it back to May, and we'll be good. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Bartles.
I'd like to move an amendment, please.
Yes.
on page 2, line 13 of the in context previously amended bill, I would like to strike the word shall and insert the word may.
Second.
There's a motion by Representative Bartles, a second by Representative Deutsch to amend may, amend shall to may on line 13 of page 2 of Senate Bill 128. Just want to take a minute and make sure that our secretary and staff have received that and are good with that and have that wording. Madam Secretary?
I'm good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep, thank you. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, motion carries. So Senate Bill 128 is now amended to say may instead of shall in line 13 of page 2. So with that, I will ask, do we have any more proponent testimony? Any opponent testimony? Any opponents online? Thank you. Okay, so with no opponent testimony, we will waive rebuttal and go to committee questions. Yes, Representative Mortensen.
For the prime sponsor, and if you need to phone a friend, feel free to do so. Madam Chair.
Please.
Senator, this references associations and then refers to 1336-4, and there's been a few references to the National Federation. Would that count as an association under the definition in 1336-4?
Madam Chair?
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The association would refer to the High School Activities Association, and the National Federation of High Schools would be covered under the definition of media contractor in this case.
Okay.
Thank you. And they derive their ability to conduct journalism through their contract with the High School Activities Association. So I think it's neatly packaged at this point.
Okay.
Thank you.
One more follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I know you guys have been working on this a little bit, and you're going to have to forgive me as a little bit of the uninitiated, but we're adding a sentence that says no association or media contractor may charge a fee for news media to engage in journalism. Who is being charged a fee that we are trying to prohibit under this bill?
Thank you for the question.
Go ahead.
Representative Mortensen. And again, the National Federation of High Schools had expressed that they felt that they had exclusive rights to the journalism opportunities, and they were then saying you either have to provide us with $100 in order to do a secondary broadcast or carry our NFHS public service announcements. And so we just want to make clear that the journalists in the state of South Dakota, our media outlets, have access to the public events, public school events that are funded by tax dollars, and that they're can be no requirement that anybody would pay anybody else a fee for doing that. It's very common for people. I mean, when you're at a game, you see the media walk in with their credentials and they say, I'm here to do the game. They don't pay to get in. They go up, they set up, they do us a service by producing that event and putting it out there for the people. And we just felt that it was appropriate to stipulate that nobody could levy a fee on them for conducting what is really a First Amendment right, freedom of the press. Thank you.
Just last follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. So would a member of the news media also be a media contractor? I mean, are there current contracts in place between a broadcaster and a school district that would qualify someone to be both news media, as it's defined in 13.157, and a media contractor?
Madam Chair, Representative, can you point me exactly to where you're looking?
You bet. So I'm in Section 1 of the bill. Can someone who is sub 4, which is a member of the news media who, as you just told us, are the entities that we're trying to prohibit from being charged a fee under this, the broadcasters, Would they also qualify as a media contractor, given that they might be an entity that contracts to conduct journalism at a high school activity or event? Could you be both?
I guess I would defer to maybe Mr. Smith if he's still around, but the point that I would make is, well, I don't know that it matters. I don't know. I think if it catches them twice, it's fine. But my point the point that I'd like to make is what you're looking at is existing statute. Because, and this was at Mr. Swartos's recommendation, he said you're really not catching the essence of the media contractor or the association under the bill as it was originally drafted. You probably want to include this language so that it's clear that it covers the High School Activities Association and anybody else like the NFHS. So that was brought in there at his recommendation, really just trying to make the bill better. But again, if it happens to have some redundancy, I don't know that it creates a problem. I think we're just trying to be abundantly clear that the policy that was the state's statute that was adopted in 2013 applies to everybody, all comers, and not just to schools and the South Dakota media outlets. Thank you.
Further questions? Okay. Other questions from the committee? Seeing no other questions, I just have one, and maybe this is for the sponsor or Dr. Swartos. My question is on page 2, line 9, and you mentioned it in your testimony, but you said the provisions of this section do not apply to any state championship interscholastic event. Can you just explain the reasoning for that exclusion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Dan Swartos, South Dakota High School Activities Association. The reasoning for that is that we have an exclusive contract for our state championship events. And the reason we have that is that that's the only lever we have to force coverage of everything. If we didn't have an exclusive contract, we'd be able to piece it out and we'd be able to have we'd have quite a few people interested in broadcasting football and basketball, maybe volleyball, maybe wrestling. But you wouldn't get any coverage of all state band, all-state chorus and orchestra, debate, oral and terp, some of those other things. So we package those together, and SDPB has the exclusive rights to those, but part of that is they have to broadcast everything. And I think the intent here was to say we consider what we would call our sub-state rounds, the playoff rounds up until that final event. We consider those state events as well, but to piece, so that was in there specifically to say that this does not pertain to the state-level, championship-level events or final events, because otherwise our SDPB contract would have been void as soon as this was passed.
Senator Greenfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, and thank you to Dr. Swartos for explaining that. And I would just reiterate, I recognize the importance of ensuring that all the kids who participate in these state-level events get the coverage that they deserve. And if you didn't have this provision in there, it could be a piecemeal deal. And some of those important events may not get picked up by media outlets. So I think by maintaining the exclusivity of the state-level events, you're ensuring that all of them are covered because it's a stipulation within the contract. So I am wholly supportive of that language and recognizing the spirit of why that's necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing no questions, I would open it up to committee discussion and/or action. Motion by Representative Stevens, a second by Representative Bartles, do pass. Representative Stevens, do you have questions or comments on your motion?
No, I think that was adequately explained.
Thank you. Any other comments on the motion? Okay. With that, Madam Secretary, would you call the roll on the do pass motion for Senate Bill 128?
Representatives Bartles?
Aye.
Davis?
Aye.
Deutsch?
Aye.
Healy?
Aye.
Jensen?
Excused.
Excused. Kynes?
Aye.
Marty?
Aye.
Excused. Oh, you're here. Excuse me, sir. Ms. Cummins?
Aye.
Mortensen?
Aye.
Odenbach?
Aye.
Soy?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Greenfield excused. Dennert?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Madam Chair, you have 13 ayes and 2 excused.
Senate Bill 128 will go to the floor with a do pass motion. If there's no objection, the chair will certify that for consent. Okay. Senate Bill 128 will go on the consent calendar. Thank you very much. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 27. Proponents for Senate Bill 27.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Heather Forney, Vice President for Finance and Administration for the Board of Regents here in Pierre. We're here on behalf of Senate Bill 27, which is an act to revise and repeal certain tuition rates at institutions governed by the Board of Regents. Senate Bill 27 essentially removes the requirement, the statutory requirement for what we call self-support tuition, which is associated with off-campus delivery of our university coursework. What it does do is maintain the authority for setting tuition and fee rates with the Board of Regents as provided in SDCL 1353-6. The history of self-support tuition really goes back a number of years. Back when I was in college, we actually did correspondence courses instead of online or hybrid. And that's really what self-support was for those non-traditional students that were taking courses off campus. And what we've discovered is that those aren't the kinds of students that are taking our online or our distance courses anymore, and the way that we deliver courses is significantly different than back in the days when the statute was first implemented. And so we do a lot of things called hybrid, asynchronous, high flex, where you've got a little bit of in-class coursework, a little bit of distance coursework, some things that are happening at the same time. And it really has blurred the lines of what is off-campus and what is on-campus. The Senate Bill 27, as it is written and as you see before you, does not apply to our centers. So the university centers in Sioux Falls and Rapid City will still maintain that higher self-support coursework, but the things that are offered on campus to our students there will be assessed or have the ability to be assessed a different rate. It won't be required by statute to be the self-support. I'll be standing by for questions and ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. Further proponents for Senate Bill 27. Any proponents online? Okay. Any opponents for Senate Bill 27? Online? Okay. So seeing no opponents, we will waive rebuttal and I will open it up to committee questions. Representative Soy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like a little bit more of a look into the term self-support. Can you say, I mean, for an example, how much that would cost versus your other form?
Sure. Madam Chair.
Yes.
Currently, our self-support rate is $351.25, and a non-self-support or state support rate at the campuses varies. It's in the $250 to $256 range. So it's about a $100 difference per credit hour.
Follow-up?
Do you have any idea of the overall financial impact of this change?
Sure, Madam Chair. I should probably identify myself again, Heather Forney, Vice President for Finance and Administration. Our intention, so we have put a work group together that consists of campus representation from all six of the institutions, and our intention is to come back with what we call a blended rate, so a rate that would have zero financial impact to the system. The intention would be to make sure that that meant no additional revenue to the campuses and no additional need for general funds. So it would be a different rate, something less than the $350 for the self-support. We're thinking probably in the $280 to $285 range, but it's still a work in progress at this point in time.
Yes.
Do you need this change to be made before you can do that study?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
We're in the works. The study is in the works as we speak. So the hope that this statute would be passed, we're doing the work now on that study.
Follow up? Okay. Yes, Representative Mortensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Forney, do you expect there to be any change in the demand for your courses if you lower the burden you're putting on students?
Madam Chair,
yes.
The way that so the students in our system currently take a blend of the kinds of courses already, and it's really whether they take a distance course versus a face-to-face course tends to be more in line with, do I want to get up at 8 o'clock on Monday, Wednesday, Friday versus having the ability to take my courses whenever I want. Has to do with the faculty member who may be your instructor. So I don't know that we're going to see a significant change in the way our students are taking courses, but I think you'll see a lot more simplicity in the way that we're charging the students. And if I might just expand on that a little bit, what we discovered with COVID-19 and our ability to offer courses on our campuses, we had what we called COVID capacity. So where you may have had a room where you had 100 students in it prior to COVID, we had to shrink that to maybe 25 or 30 students, or we had to go to this hybrid model where some of the students were in class, you know, on Mondays and the others were there Wednesdays, and we were kind of having to blend those things. And the problem that we were running into is the way that the statute is written and the way that it's we're charging the students. If we move from a face-to-face course that they registered for at the $250 rate, and then we had to move it to a distance offering because of COVID capacity or our ability to trying to protect the students and the faculty, we would have to charge them more. And that causes a lot of angst and consternation to both the parents and the students. Our campuses did a really nice job of trying to backfill the difference through foundation funds, raising dollars to make up for that difference in rates. But we're just trying to simplify it so that, you know, hopefully we don't have another pandemic, but if we have to make changes to the way that we're offering courses, the students don't suffer.
Paula?
No.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? I have a couple, Ms. Forney. Can you give me just a general idea of what percentage of students take courses actually sitting in the classroom? And maybe it might be hard with the COVID implications now, but do your best, and then what percentage are online? And some of those might just be sitting in their dorm room online.
Correct. Madam Chair, prior to COVID, we use the COVID year as kind of an asterisk, so we're not really using that as a base for any of our numbers that we're sharing. But prior to COVID, roughly a third of our students took 100% of their classes online. Roughly a third of our students took 100% of their classes face-to-face, and a third of our students took some combination of the two.
Thank you. Just one additional question. With the change in tuition, do you anticipate a change in fees?
Madam Chair, that's part of the study that we're doing as well, is what does our tuition and fee structure look like, with the intention overall it would be revenue neutral to the system and we would not be coming back and asking for any general funds.
One follow-up then, and I'm assuming that would be revenue neutral or cost neutral to the students.
Madam Chair, it's going to depend on how the student is currently enrolled. If you're a non-resident student, you may see a higher rate. If you're a resident student, I would anticipate, if you were one of those that took all of your classes face-to-face and you didn't take any online, it should be about the same. If you were a student that took all of your courses online, there would probably be a cost savings to them because that rate will come down a little bit.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Marty.
Thank you. I don't know if this has anything to do with what we're talking about, but we're the highest, our tuition rate is the highest in all the surrounding states. Could you explain how our tuition rates are set and such? Because I've had a lot of parents and students get a hold of me why South Dakota is so high versus other states.
Madam Chair. Heather Forney with the Board of Regents again. So, Representative Marty, I would say that our tuition is not the highest in the surrounding states. I would say that our net tuition is the highest in the surrounding states, and that's after you factor in all of the scholarships that are available. So hopefully Senate Bill 171 passes and we get that needs-based scholarship through, because that will significantly impact. But the way that the tuition is set currently is we look at typically the only increases that happen with our tuition now are specifically tied to salary policy. So we're not doing a lot of inflation just randomly for, you know, CPI or anything like that. We're looking at whatever the salary policy is for our faculty and staff that are not supported by general funds, and including any increases or changes to health insurance or benefits. So with this 2.4% proposed salary policy and a potential decline in the health insurance that is being looked at right now, we would still see, with no other inflation, at least a 1% increase in our tuition and fees because of the number of our faculty and staff that are funded through tuition and fees, so not through general funds. So when you approve a 2.4% salary policy package, you're not giving us the funding for all of our faculty and staff. You're only giving us that funding for our general fund employees.
Follow-up?
Did you say that our tuition rates aren't the highest? Or what? Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Our gross tuition, so the tuition that's being charged by our campuses, is not the highest in the region, but the net tuition, so the tuition less any kinds of scholarships, is high because we don't offer any kind of a needs-based scholarship.
Follow-up? Okay. Other questions? Just a clarification on Representative Marty's question. When you're talking about net tuition or gross tuition, does that include tuition and fees when you're saying that? It's the total.
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay, thank you. I do have one other question. Can you give the committee an idea of what types of things are funded by fees?
Sure, Madam Chair. So we have what we call special discipline fees, which are usually your STEM, your higher, more expensive kinds of courses, your engineering, your science, any kinds of fine arts that would require space for dancing or those kinds of things. And those fees typically will go back to the departments that are being assessed. So if I'm a chemistry department at USD, there's a special discipline fee associated with chemistry, and that will go back to the chemistry department for things like lab improvements, equipment in the labs, those kinds of things. And so the fee is, it may also go to our STEM instructors are higher cost, and so it may help to backfill the cost of those higher paid instructors.
Thank you. Are there other fees in addition to...
Sure, Madam Chair. The general activity fee may be what you're thinking of. And the general activity fee is different at each of our campuses. It's going to be a little bit different depending on the campus, but typically part of those general activity fees are used to pay for things like bonds on a student union, which are used by all the students, a wellness center, which is used by all the students. It's used for the operations of those kinds of things. And then our students themselves are in charge of the difference. So if you had a $40 general activity fee and $20 of those fees are committed to payments of bonds and operations of those facilities, the other $20 go back to the students, and then they determine how to allocate those dollars. And it's typically for things like student health, student counseling, activities like a club, debate club, or a hockey club, anything that is of particular interest to the students. And the students are the ones that then determine the allocation of that $20 that wasn't for bond payments and operations.
Thank you. Further committee questions? We could turn this into an appropriations committee meeting if you'd like. I go through a little bit of withdrawal occasionally,
sure.
So right? Yeah. So, okay. If there are no further questions, I would open it up for committee discussion or action.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Mortensen.
I move do pass.
Second.
We have a motion by Representative Mortensen, second by Representative Bartles, do pass on Senate Bill 27. Madam Chair, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Oh.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Any comments on your motion?
You
sorry.
Bet. This is an interesting and important topic. I can't agree more with the sentiments of my brother from Prairie City over here, Representative Marty. I think that college affordability is one of the 5 or 10 toughest nuts to crack at the state level when I think about big issues that are hard to solve. Ms. Forney's comments were very important, which is the Board of Regents only gets money from two places, the state or the students. They can't go out and opt out and levy and these kinds of things. And so when we're going to do 2.4% salary policy and we give them 2.4 for our portion, if they don't raise the 2.4 somewhere else, it gets really hard to pay for it. Now, increasing tuition and fees over and over and over is not something that I like or that I have an answer to, but I think it's incumbent on this committee and all of us to be thinking in the off season and thinking big about how we solve this, because college affordability is incredibly important and it's going the wrong way and has for a long time, and I don't particularly blame that on anybody. I think this bill has, it makes sense from the pitch we've heard and the way that people are taking these courses. For online courses, you're competing with the University of Phoenix and some of these other things. I think it makes sense for our institutions to be a little more competitive in those arenas, so I'll support this bill. Hope you do too.
Additional comments? Representative Soy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this change is coming a little bit preemptively. I would have liked to see the study actually completed before we're being asked to make this change, because we really don't know what the entire impact is going to be. How is this going to shift to fees? So I just don't think that we can make a change when we don't have an actual dollar amount that this change is going to affect. And I agree, we need to look at affordability, but I think there's a lot of other ways to look at affordability, including cutting costs. So I'm going to be resisting this motion.
Additional comments? Yes, Representative Odenbach.
I would just like to add that I am glad this discussion just got started today about the causes of college affordability or the lack thereof, and I look forward vigorously to that debate in the future. More to come on that.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Bartles.
Well, I think it's incumbent on me to comment on this, having been an appropriator and also currently sitting on what we commonly refer to as Senate Bill 55 Committee. It was a bill that was passed last year to look at college university costs and to jumpstart the Board of Regents to look at that. And we are looking at everything from administrative costs to curriculum and programs that are offered for duplication, how they prevent duplication, all the way to, we're doing some really simple things, but one of the good things is we've just recently done is combined some of the legal functions across all the 6 universities in the Board of Regents office. Instead of trying to do that 7 places, we're doing it in one place now, which makes a lot of sense with Title IX, which is a big cost constantly to the universities, which was a surprise to me. So I think we're working at the things we're talking about, but this is an area of concern, I think, to the Senate Bill 55 and to appropriators in the past. This bill was put in place when the university centers were created, and they picked up technology classes, I'm going to say online classes in their definition. And they really weren't happening back then, but I think they've moved. I think we're uncompetitive in this arena. It's just not fair to charge a student extra when they're doing it back and forth. I think this will work out for in the long run for the benefit of the students, and I think it's a good thing. This is a bill I'm wholeheartedly in favor of, so I certainly hope that we pass this out.
Further comments on the motion? Don't want to cut you off too early. Okay. All right. Madam Secretary, would you now please call the roll on the due pass motion of Senate Bill 27?
Representatives Bartles?
Aye.
Davis?
Aye.
Deutsch?
Aye.
Healy?
Aye.
Jensen, excused. Kynes?
Aye.
Marty?
No.
Ms. Cummins?
Aye.
Mortensen?
Aye.
Odenbach?
Aye.
Soy?
No.
Stevens?
Aye.
Dennard?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Madam Chair, you have 11 ayes, 2 nays, and 2 excused.
Senate Bill 27 has passed with a due pass motion and will go to the floor. Any comments on your motion? just before we take that up, I would just like to take this opportunity to thank all committee members. This is our last committee meeting of this session, and would like to also thank our intern and our staff who has been with us online, and we look forward to having you back with us soon. So I'll be thinking also about studies, summer studies that you might like to propose related to education, and we'll be hearing about the deadlines to get those in soon. So with that, I will, pardon? Did I forget approval of the minutes? I did. Oh, okay. So
Mortensen moves we approve the minutes of the past meeting.
That's a substitute motion. Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay. All those in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
All right.
Second.
Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.